Welcome, listeners. It's episode 80 of Rack Addicts After Hours, a music and technology podcast. Welcome. You're greeted by the voice of Ben, but we've also got Pete here today. We're going to chat synths, there might be some space, and who knows what else, because if you script things too much, then, I don't know, it's not so loosey-goosey, much less fun. We tend to start off with a weekly roundup. Pete, what have you been doing? Noises,
yes. Well, the gas is throttled off a bit, luckily. Mm. I have made a purchase. I ordered some black anodized rails from Clicks and Clocks in Berlin.
You found a source for your patch cables as well, also black?
Yes, I haven't placed that order yet. That was a company, what were the Polar?
Polar Noise.
Yes.
There we are.
Yeah, so it is a Dutch company called Polar Noise, and they do a selection of 3.5 mil patching cables for Eurorack, including a 5 centimeter cable if you want to make those tiniest of tiniest connections.
They are really handy, and when you have those neat little connections, it's very satisfying.
Yes, so I will be buying a selection of lengths, and all the cables will be black.
Mm. Have you heard of tendrils cables as well?
I haven't.
They can be quite handy if you have any case in both senses, if you have a case and a case for that case, where you might need a permanently patched thing, potentially part of your mixing system, setting up your effects, but they're right angles, so you can have them really flat, flush against everything, so they just stay there and out of the way.
Yeah, I'm going
available in black.
I'm going to have everything velcroed and neat and under control, rather than, because a certain amount of the patching doesn't really change. There's sort of fundamental connections once you've got everything there always stay, you know.
Especially if it's going to be a live case, which this one is.
Yeah, I don't want to really be, I'm not one for wanting to be repatching in the middle of a set.
That is fun, though, depending on how you
depends on your definition of fun.
That was the format for the Brighton Modular sessions. The idea was improvised patching. So you just start with fresh. The rules were no pre-patched patch patches. You just had to kind of go. It was great. We had some really fun ambient stuff. One of the chaps who I saw on my last day at the music shop brought one of the Coma field kits, and he had a, I think it was just a motor with a little offset thing. You know how vibration motors work in controllers? He had that and just put it in a little glass, piezo thing on the glass. It's really cool. Anyway, asides.
Yes, so I've ordered the black anodized rails from Clicks and Clocks. They're going to be 104 HP.
Yes, the best size.
And two sets, so that'll be 6U. I'd swerve towards having a three rows of 84, but something about that size, I think it starts getting
the
a
square
bit unwieldy.
It's something about the square that's not quite right.
Yes, not for live anyway. Yeah. So the two rows has an appeal, but moving to this new size of 104 HP, I think it's just wide enough without being too wide.
Here's a thought that you might not have considered. What about 7U? Because there's a lot more available in the 1U world, and you could move some things like attenuators and some basic stuff that you might not want to, say, suspend your valuable HP on.
It certainly hasn't been in my plan, and now I've got the performance mixer, and that's obviously full 3U height, so I'm not sure if there's anything, I mean, I can see the attraction of it, but I don't think there's anything particularly in my plans that would warrant that. I think I'm going to have the capacity once I get these rails, and then I can get this case done, and then that's that out of the way. Also, and it's something we've spoken about on many occasions, you know, when we've discussed items that are very well made and have a certain feel.
The things that we still don't have a very quick description of that we like to talk about because they're very satisfying.
So
I've
just bought something as a replacement. So my daughter is working on a production for a popular streaming service.
No names mentioned here.
Yeah, as much as I can say.
We'll have to kill you.
So, yeah, so she is required to have tools because she's working for a prop master. And I took her along to a particular tool shop in Twickenham, which is on the outskirts of London, for our listeners who aren't in the UK. It's one of these tool shops that literally sells everything, virtually every brand.
Yeah.
Certainly all the brands that you can acquire
that you care
in the UK.
About. So it's not your B&Q, your Homebase, your standard.
No, it's not your normal DIY.
You know.
They literally, I mean, they cater very much for the professional technician, engineer, craftsman, etc., etc. So they sell everything from quite large table saws right down to screwdrivers and everything in between. and the, all the powder.
The good stuff.
All the good stuff, all the brands. So you go there and there'll be a whole aisle of DeWalt.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a whole aisle. Literally, the whole aisle is yellow, both sides. And another whole aisle is Nikita. And
yeah, Makita Blue, yeah.
Another whole aisle will be Milwaukee and et cetera, and it just goes on. Another whole aisle will be Bosch.
Yeah.
And plus various many other makes. So I replace something, and my replacement is literally just by your rucksack. So I thought I'd strategically place it there. It's just under
the... Is it the little hammerhead that I can see?
Yes, so pull that out. So I believe that these are most probably the best manufacturers of hammers in the world. So it's a Estwing hammer from the USA. So that's a 20-ounce claw hammer, curved claw hammer.
Listeners, there is something about this. I will try and articulate it while Pete's still going.
I have gone for the one with the genuine leather handle rather than
It's leather.
Yes.
Oh, this isn't a wrap, is it? It looks like discs stacked.
I think it's wound on there, one piece.
No, I think I am actually right
in this. You think they're discs?
Yeah, so I think, similar to, if you think of the grip portion, I probably don't have the words right, of a sword.
Yes.
So you'd have the guard kind of section above, pommel below. A lot of the way that works is they'll have just a cylinder of wood, potentially, that they might then wrap, and they'll screw the pommel on and kind of wedge it in. I think we've got a similar situation here where it's kind of, it has a tang, a hammer with a tang. Wow. Yeah. And yeah, they've stacked up just discs of leather. You've got a couple of detail ones in there, and it looks like they've then riveted on what I guess is sort of a pommel for a hammer. This is so cool.
My other one, which my daughter now possesses and has in her toolkit for her work, is a slightly smaller. It's a 16-ounce version of that, but I've had it for 35 years.
Nice. Oh, this is
and
wonderful.
I've been promising to myself they're quite expensive for a hammer.
I'll say one thing and then I'll make my guess. Above the grip portion to the hammer head, in the cheap hammers that I know and the one that I have, it's just, you know, it's just a cylindrical sort of rod or whatever. This is, I have no idea if it's probably just ground, but it's to a thin, like a thin profile.
Yes.
Yeah, this absolutely falls into the category that I haven't figured out a name for. That's brilliant. Oh, look at that on the bottom. Oh, Estwing, USA. Warning. Wear safety goggles.
I've got some other ones with the synthetic handles.
Yeah.
They do a range of different shapes, but I'm not sure if they do anything but hammers. I don't know of any other products that they do other than hammers.
Right, it's time for my guess on the price tag. So my concept of hammers is it's going to be a tenner for just a hammer, probably less. This one's almost certainly got some definite handmadeness. To what extent, I don't know.
It's most probably a video out there somewhere that you can watch
it
being made.
How it's made, we love that show. Leather, I'm going to jump above the £50 mark.
A bit high.
That's a bit high?
Yeah.
Okay, in that case, I'm going to say it's £45.
Very close. I think it's 43.
Okay. I was expecting worse, obviously, with my initial price. That's really nice.
But it's really a hammer for life.
Better be.
But I do like, I mean, we've said it many times, we both like really good quality tools. I suppose anyone that uses tools regularly, there is a distinct difference between using a kind of brand X or the real thing. It's a bit like using Snap-on equipment.
I've never met any before.
It is eye-wateringly expensive, but when you use it, you realise why. Plus the fact it's guaranteed for life.
One day I'll figure out a way to describe that to people efficiently, rather than us going, yeah, you know those things where they're really well made and it's so cool.
Again, I think we said when we initially had this conversation about a year ago on the podcast that we felt maybe some German word that
There absolutely must be, but I don't know any fluent German speaking people to ask. So listeners, we're on Facebook at Rack Addicts UK and Instagram Rack Addicts UK. If you know the word for things that are very long-lasting, potentially handmade, very tactile and satisfying. There might be brass involved. Brass is wonderful. Leather, potentially. That kind of thing. A Leatherman multi-tool. A Moleskine notebook. A high-quality flight case that closes really well. That's all I've got off the top of my head. That kind of thing. If you know the word that would describe the pleasure of using and owning these things, please let us know. There's the British summer that you might be able to hear, probably won't be able to hear in the background. A catastrophic rain on this July
afternoon.
A July afternoon. Yeah, disastrous. Any more from your week? Stories from Pete's week?
That was it, really. The hammer was the big excitement.
That's definitely something to be excited about. What was the name of the shop, by the way? Because I just want to go and browse now.
It is D&M Tools in Twickenham. And I would advise anybody who is geographically close enough to and is interested in that type of thing, into tools, I would definitely recommend they go and have a look at least. It's a real Aladdin's cave. It's very much like going to the music retail shop that you no longer work at.
Yeah, we often get that comment. It just keeps going. Or actually, that big Chinese or Asian supermarket.
Ho Hings.
Yeah, that was surprisingly massive. I have been now.
Which one? The one on the Great West Road near Wembley?
The Wembley one, yeah.
But yeah, that one's a real experience. It's like you've just been teleported to Hong Kong or something.
Yeah. Of my week, what I'm currently doing is waiting, hoping that the synthesizer and music interest juices slowly creep back. I'm not, no pressure, not going to put pressure on myself, but we're waiting and hoping that the interest begins again. I'm actually sort of planning the first move.
Oh, yeah.
So Plinky is fun, but as a first main module, not the most useful, just because it does have sort of inputs and outputs and the expander will allow it to be 4 LFOs and stuff. But yeah, I think mostly I'll just end up using it as a reverb early on and then probably remove it from the case later because it's most fun as a portable thing anyway. I've always advised people, no, just you know, you want modules, but buy a semi-modular first and everything will be easier and you'll save money. And I didn't, I've said before, I never took my advice, but now I'm thinking, what do I do first? I don't know.
Not like you're a newbie. I mean, you've had equipment, you've got a lot of experience.
Mm.
Surely you can be a bit more discerning.
Well, I'd hope so. The question is what?
And you've got the lack of case.
Yes. So I'm thinking, like the Behringer modular ones, something that you can take out and put in a case is quite satisfying. So there's the Pittsburgh options, the SV1 Lifeforms system, and it's not the Voltage Research Lab, because that's sort of a thing in two parts. Let me have a look.
What about the O-Coast?
A great option. I've still not played with one, and I would like it to be caseable, which you can technically do it with an O-Coast if you void your warranty.
Yeah, you can butcher them.
Though that's not absolutely vital.
It's a shame they haven't built that option in that you can remount it into a larger case.
It's a
case.
Weird choice. Same with the newer one, the Strega.
Yeah.
Why not? Because if you wanted to have them and the no control next to each other, you have to have the stupid power supplies out the side and you have to bodge something to get them to look cool.
But you can make an O-Coast out of individual make noise modules.
You can, more expensively most likely.
Yes,
though.
Definitely more expensively. Yeah.
So it's the Lifeforms Voltage Lab black box and SV1 black box, which would be the standalones. They also have the Microvolt, but I don't think that's caseable. I think the Voltage Labs might be actually reasonably high because it was a limited run, so I don't know if you can even get hold of it anymore, but it's a bit more left field. I don't think I want to do Neutron or SV1 or Atlantis, you know, your typical subtractive. So No Coast would be high on the list. Yeah, the Lifeforms Voltage Lab, potentially. Anything else crossing your brain that I'm forgetting?
Most of them are the systems we spoke about, having a system which is all one manufacturer. So they're individual modules, but they come as, well, they're invariably very expensive.
Yeah, you've got to take a grand-sized bite at least.
Oh, minimum. To chew on a that lot one. Of them are double that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, have you thought about the Analog Solutions Vostok?
No, I haven't.
And you potentially might want the original one, which can only be got second hand, but they do come up occasionally. It's got a pin matrix.
So it does. It's very much out of my budget, though, really, for a single chunk.
Okay, what sort of monies are you seeing on?
Probably below 800 would be perfect.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, it's slightly more.
Talking about semi-modular voices, I totally forgot that Dreadbox exists and that I really, really like the Nix.
Yes, that's very popular.
Because just the juiciest reverb, and it's a little bit weird, so it's fun.
So is that the Mark II, Mark III? I've lost count.
Two, I think, but I really like the form factor of the old ones, so let's see. Just let's have a look on Reverb right now.
See how much see one if of any those of them would are... set you back.
Yeah, well, also see if any of the old ones are kicking about, because I quite like them. The Erebus would be nice, too.
Again, which version?
There's two, because I think that's a square one. We're on V3 at the moment, I believe.
We are on V3 at the moment.
Right, here we go. Dreadbox Nix, reverb.com. These are all V2s, V2, V2, V2. Nope, let's try the Ebays. Because you do pay a bit more on Reverb, to be honest. The prices never seem to go as low. Ooh, right, I'm going to come back to something. Dreadbox Nix, what I got on eBay. V2 for about 380 there. 3757, interesting. Anyway, we'll look into it. So I have choices, and I'll let you know if I make one. I made an ooh sound because there's another aspect of that one thing that we're trying to find the word for. I have vague plans for a lot of things, but one of the vague plans is to make a sort of custom bag for my field recording stuff, because at the moment I have no solution to carry it all when I want to go and capture some sounds. So thinking about the future as well, provision for something, sound devices, mix pre-flavored potentially. Anyway, planning that, I've been doing a bit of research on fabrics, so various Cordura things, how to sew thick fabrics, the strategies for making an adjustable length strap. One thing that I don't even know where I noticed these, but there's a really cool buckle that satisfies the certain requirements, and I tracked it down. It's made by a company called Australpin or something like that, and it's called the Cobra, which is a quick release buckle. I will show you a picture in a second, Pete, because you will probably recognize it. It's a sort of quick release mechanical metal buckle that, you know, meets military strain and durability type requirements, but I've heard them and I've held them, and they are the most satisfying buckle you could possibly ever snap together. And I just need one for this bag that I may never make. To be honest, I might end up just buying one just to have it, just because that's how weird I am with this thing. So, Pete, this is the stuff.
Okay.
Have you seen this kind of thing before?
I don't know that I... To be honest, I can't really see it from here.
Oh, no. Let me get you a bigger picture. So, I've always found, actually, the kind of buckles that you get on planes quite satisfying, because they do make a nice click. Anyway, here's a better picture there.
Okay, so that is the whole buckle?
That's the thing.
Yes.
So you've got the two halves. There's sort of these wing-type buttons that you just press in to release, and it's... Listeners, just give it a Google. Austrialpin Cobra.
Well, that's just the buckle.
That's just the buckle.
So what material would you be making the bag in?
With the research I've done when buying bikepacking bags and such, you often come across the right kind of materials to look for. So in terms of the strap, it would just be probably a simple, relatively wide nylon webbing. But then Cordura is the preferred material for not necessarily waterproof, but definitely water resistant bags. So that would be the way I'd have to go on that front. So it's still relatively sewable, although definitely want to get a chunky needle and a thimble so you can actually push the thread through. I've done a little bit of this kind of thing before, because I did make a little rain jacket for one of my old modular cases before I had the backpack. But we'll see how that goes, and I'll let you know if it goes. That's weekly updates done. There's actual news. We have things to talk about. Where do you want to start, Pete? Should we do in the order of the notes?
It's totally up to you.
Well, we're going to do that then.
Follow you wherever you wish to go with this.
Oh, too kind. If we go on to Modular Grid and do the thing that I do when I'm searching for new stuff, which is just sorting by newest. One that came up recently, or is it two that came up recently? Yes, it's two that came up recently. From Endorphins, endorphin.es. We have two, Total Recall and two of Cups. Start with Total Recall. This guy is a preset manager, 3x preset manager, similar to... it's just called the Polyend preset. You know, so a bunch of CVs, you can set them somewhere and you can come back to them. So it's useful for setting up sort of amounts of CV. You could even use it to preset some routings. But if you want to have a certain amount of saving in your patching, which is often not easy, this will do it for you. So you have three outputs to work with, and I believe you can set these up in a few different ways. So you've got three potentiometers corresponding to your three outputs. Those can be attenuators, so there's CV ins for these as well. Depending on how you want to use things, they can be offsets as well. They can be bipolar, they can be unipolar, and all sorts of stuff. Let me read you the blurb a little bit. Useful for transitions, three CVs at once. So 6 HP, so not too big at all. Three channels. You have eight presets that you can use. They can be in two banks, and you also have smoothing as well for your CV, so I imagine there's some slew limiting in there somewhere. You can trigger transitions between them if you need, and you also have a button to swap. Simple, but can be really handy if you're into your live stuff. The other one, that's Total Recall, by the way, the other one that was released at the same time, or released, made available, put on Modular Grid, Two of Cups, which frustrated me slightly. This is a two-voice intuitive sample player with eight banks of 24 samples, and it comes with some preloaded stuff. Fairly normal. You've got a pitch or sample select control for each of the two voices. You can do volt per octave for them as well. And you've got trigger buttons and trigger inputs as well. So, two voices. That immediately makes me think, ooh, stereo. As far as I can see, there's no way to run it in a stereo mode, which just seems like a huge oversight. Because one thing I've been looking for is, similar to the radio music, is just a way of really easily having access to looping, stereo, high-quality samples. And I thought, oh, this could... No, it can't. Oh, well. I think it's mostly sort of going after, you know, drum samples, that kind of stuff. Melodic stuff as well, but one-shots is the kind of idea. That's available as well. Two of Cups by Endorphins.
I did watch the video, and I still wasn't quite sure how I would utilise something like this.
Yeah, it's... There was a similar kind of idea that ADAC system have, which I think it's just called Transitions, where you have a bunch of CV outputs, and you can set them to a certain amount, and then another set of the same, you set them to another one, and then there's just a master control to fade between the two. So it's kind of a way of setting up scenes. Let's say, I don't know why you'd want to do this, but you could. Let's say you had a physical modelling type voice, potentially like Surface by Qubit or Rings, and you wanted to have two sounds available, but that involved twiddling a bunch of knobs and you'd kind of get it wrong. You could really easily swap between those two sounds, or if you had quite a complex setup using some FM or a complex oscillator, you could potentially, if you're using a lot of CV into the thing, you could potentially get back to a saved state. I think that's generally the kind of idea. It can also be useful for transitioning to some new sounds in a live setup. If you need it, you need it, and it's there. If you haven't thought, ooh, this would be good, it's... I don't think you'd want to force yourself to try and implement it. Let's say you've got a sequencer, you can really easily move to a next sequence to advance your set. But this is going to open that door to be able to move to a new set of sounds, I suppose. That's the kind of idea, I believe. But no, it's not something I could see myself implementing either. There's another one that we mentioned in the shop, but then totally forgot to bring onto the podcast that week. This is a recreation of an old Sonic Potions project. So they've teamed up with Erica Synths. This was leaked by Sweetwater, by the way. Imagine how happy they're going to be. Sweetwater leak a lot of stuff, don't they?
Is that official or unofficial? Is it a sort of nod and a wink? Or
No, this one it was definitely sort of a leak. It was definitely Sweetwater. But they did, pretty sure they leaked the Korg full-size, very expensive 2600. Pretty sure they leaked something Behringer once. I don't know how or why, but it happens a lot. Anyway, that's a side thing. This is the LXR-02, because they did the LXR-01. That was just Sonic Potions. Now, Erica Synths are on board. It looks very Erica Synths, just in terms of the chassis and the kind of knobs that they're using, the buttons they're using. Had a quick listen. It sounds pretty cool. It's a six drum voice drum machine, digital drum voices that seem very programmable. So on the demos there were lots of strange, slightly melodic tune percussion stuff as well, lots of kind of aggressive techno sounding bits. It looks pretty easy to use. You've got a bunch of faders on there, you can individually design each voice, you've got a sequencer, you'll probably have your patterns, your performances, song stuff, SD card to back up your projects. Yeah, it seems pretty standard, to be honest. Sounds cool. If you want it, you want it, but definitely worth checking out so you're aware if it's what you needed. Erica Synths and Sonic Potions, LXR-02.
At least it's got a song mode in it.
Digitact, we're looking at you.
Well, even with the new firmware.
Still doesn't have a song mode.
No.
They've got to have a reason to buy an Octatrack, you know?
It's just a shame. I mean, it would just make it so much better if the Digitact had a song mode.
It would. It would.
Hence why mine might be departing. Well, not necessarily departing from the rig, anyway.
You were thinking 1010...
Black Box.
Black Box, yeah, so next on the one for a replacement.
Yeah, I'm still thinking 1010 black box, but also in the context of my modular system, and maybe not go for the endorphins and maybe just have the black box do it all.
Yeah.
And just have sounds.
And the weirder sequencing.
Yeah, the weird sequencing and the sound mangling in the Eurorack setup.
You could always actually use then the blue box and save yourself some mixing, though you've already bought it. So I'm
happy with the mixer and there's a stereo input which would suit the black box perfectly, and just have it sort of to one side and use it as a master clock as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be the brains and drive the whole thing. Might be the way to go. Kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah. Now I should probably think about the blue box, because that would be very efficient. I'm not going to think about it.
I would imagine it's not cheap.
Exactly. It's money and it's far away. So a juicy one, potentially. Soma Labs. We know them. We love them. I am enjoying the Lyra. I actually played with it the other day, which is great. If you don't know Soma Labs, I'm actually going to read you something which should kind of sum them up a little bit if I can find the product. So I'll read you the blurb. You might get a vibe for the company, apart from the fact they make very strange instruments. This is the blurb for the Quantum Ocean. Quantum Ocean is an experimental electro-shamanistic project that is a combination of an analog device and special psychic exercises which can help you to achieve new possibilities of perception and action, as well as rich new useful states of mind. The device itself is a high-quality analog generator of binaural noise, carefully designed in a way to be the base for described psychotechnics. Don't know what that is. It has an aluminium enclosure and PCB assembled by through-hole technology. The soldering, assembling, and tuning are made manually in Russia. The device designed to be a kind of modern ritual object for 21st century explorers of the inner space.
Not sure what I make. I understood the aluminium bit.
As far as I can tell, I did read the manual because it is sort of interesting. You plug in headphones and it plays noise at you. It's kind of it.
That's their whole raison d'etre, isn't it?
Pretty much. So probably their biggest hit would be the Lyra 8. Coming in a close second would probably be the Pulsar 23. That's definitely got a lot of coverage. That's their drum machine with alligator clip patching and such. But they've hinted a new one. This is Reflex. I have watched the video briefly and heard the strange sounds. A new Soma instrument in development, and the prototype does not look good. We'll just put it that way. Very prototypey. Six voice digital polysynth with several unique features and innovations, and the idea is for an unparalleled level of real-time control over both timbre and sound, merging the creation of timbres and the act of playing notes into a single process. I guess it's kind of similar to the Objective for things like the Osmos and those other ones that are squishy that we don't like. Rolly.
I don't hate them or anything like that. They're just very expensive and they go all floppy and weird when they get old.
So I don't think it's anything especially world-changing, but it is certainly a different way of thinking of things.
Well, we can't really judge until they've got a tangible product.
So it's going to be, so far what you can see in the demo is some pretty hacked together stuff, but in the same way you've got the little touchpad plate things on the Pulsar 23 and the Lyra 8, there are these 16 hemispheres arranged in a ergonomical hand-shaped thing, and they'll control synthesis parameters. There might be, I don't know, there might be pressure sensitivity potentially. If there isn't, I'd be surprised. It's supposed to be very sensitive, under the fingers, instant. We'll see how it goes, but it didn't blow me away from the demo. What do you reckon?
I haven't got an opinion, to be honest, yet until, as I say, they have a tangible product.
Yeah, I'm interested in these new interaction methods.
I can't imagine it will be very cheap.
Probably not, no. Like, there's the Expressive E Touche, which is definitely quite cool. Definitely a different way for interacting. And, of course, the Osmos. Very exciting.
Which we still haven't seen.
No, we still haven't anyway. Another interesting thought process, I suppose, is but the designer of the UDO Super 6, the way he designed the UI, at least, to be kind of sort of a left to right-ish, but also when you're making a new patch from scratch, you kind of go around the synth in quite a logical way so that it's quite a good experience to just start afresh and just get stuck in. He's aiming for that tactile experience. And I guess it's a similar thing here, though rather than a tactile experience for programming patches, but for playing. So we'll keep an eye on it and we'll see what we have. Plan to continue releasing synthesis algorithms after launch. So it could have some legs in it, but we'll see how we go. We're at the end of the podcast. But don't go anywhere, because you might be bored. You know, you might be stuck inside still. That's why we've got a miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. Because I tried to force the alliteration on it. I'm going to go first, because I'm actually ready this time. I'm pretty sure we've recommended Tom Scott before.
Yes, I'm sure we have.
This is a specific video of his that I thought was really, really cool. He went to, I believe, an Ocado facility. If you're not in the UK, Ocado they're just a grocery delivery online type service. And he went to one of their packing places. And it's so cool. Have you seen this video yet, Pete?
No, I don't believe. Is it a recent one?
Yesterday, I think.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Yesterday, indeed. So, think of a warehouse. Now, stop thinking of a warehouse, because that's not what this is. Imagine a grid, noughts and crosses style grid, massive grid. And in each of the squares of the grid, I didn't really get a dimension, they're probably a bit under a meter square. There'll be the product. Could be a certain brand of toilet paper, could be bell peppers, who knows. This grid, the lines are steel tracks arranged nicely in a grid for devices, square robotic looking devices that whiz along the top. They can move in, you know, the two, the X and the Y kind of axes. They whiz along, and these robotic doodads will lower a something, grab the thing, and they'll do the picking and packing. I'm not selling this because it's really cool, but Tom interviews a couple of people that work there, and they call the controlling system, the bit of software, they call it the Hive Mind. This facility is the Hive, and there's...
It's a bit sinister.
Yeah, I think there's several thousand of these. They don't call them robots, but these sort of active devices that wheel around with 5 millimeters between them if they kind of, you know, go past each other.
Automated pickers.
Yeah, it's so cool just watching it happen, and it really feels futuristic. So you've got to have a look at this one. Go on Tom Scott's channel. This is a video from the 5th of July, 2021. How many robots does it take to run a grocery store? Super cool stuff. Pete, what have you got?
Well, over the last few weeks, you've been expressing your increasing interest in 3D graphics.
Yeah, I did a little bit today. Yeah,
certainly. So quite a few years ago, before a lot of the technology had matured, there was a program that I got which netted really good results quickly. It was quite easy. It had a non-conventional interface, really quite strangely designed. And it was by the gentleman that did a special Photoshop set of tools, which I don't believe is available anymore, called Kai's Power Tools.
So like plugins for...
Yeah, it was a plugin for Photoshop, and there was several versions of it, and then eventually the last incarnation again had a very non-conventional interface and was able to do all sorts of strange kind of almost 3D liquidy type of stuff in still format. And subsequently, they brought out a 3D package that was particularly adept at generating landscapes.
Oh, yeah.
And it was called Bryce.
B-R-I-C-E?
B-R-Y-C-E. As in Bryce Canyon, which is in Utah, I would like to say.
It does look a little bit old at the moment.
Well, the software package.
Potentially. But if it still works and still spits out files that are just normal, you know, mesh type files, it could potentially still work.
Yes. The last incarnation was version 7. Mm. And my original version that I bought when I first bought it was in the late 90s, I want to say. And I had to pay monies for it. But the version 7 eventually became free. It was subsequently bought up by another company called Daz 3D, who are a purveyor or retailer of 3D assets for enthusiasts, not necessarily for professionals. So they have Daz 3D have a massive range of sort of mannequins, various different genders and shapes and sizes and so forth, and other type of assets for building. I suppose you could use them for games or any other
I said, if it spits out just a kind of a mesh or something, it might still work.
It does work in various different file formats, but I think it's also got its own unique, because it would do all the color rendering as well, and you would pick various materials to do the sort of skinning things up. I don't know, there's mostly a technical term for that. Anyway, so my recommendation,
texturing, that kind
of
thing.
Yes,
it's only $19.95.
well, you can still purchase it
From Daz.
I mean, that's not bad, considering I think I spent considerably more on that on the version 1 when it first was released by the original vendors of that particular software. But then subsequently, as I say, Daz 3D purchased it, and they sell it and have it in their arsenal of other tools.
Mm.
It helps facilitate the sales of their 3D assets.
Yeah.
Anyway, the YouTube channel in question is simply named after the gentleman that runs it, and it's David Brynan. I think that's how he'd spell that. So David, spelt the conventional way, and then Brynan, spelt B-R-I-N-N-E-N.
Yeah.
And basically, it's a set of Bryce tutorials.
Actually, some of the stuff that's coming out of this looks really cool. I'm going to have to give it a go.
I've got a copy of it if you require one.
Ooh.
Because I was awarded it for free.
Ah.
It was available free at one stage.
Mm.
But even at, what did you say it was, £20? Or
$20.
$20, yeah. Even at $20, it's a bargain, because it's actually quite, it's very, I wouldn't say instant gratification. Some of the renders can take quite a long time, because it will animate as well.
Yeah.
And it's not as comprehensive as maybe current programs, but it's certainly, it's accessible.
Yeah, and specialised in quite an interesting area as well.
Yeah, very much landscapes and so forth, and it will actually generate the landscape. So it does, and it has lots of fluids and things like that. So it's got various different skies and cloudscapes and various different liquid surfaces that you can employ. I believe it'll do a certain amount of volumetric, and it's showing its age a bit. But I've had many hours of joy creating sort of abstract stuff or trying to create things, and it actually looks quite realistic without frying your noodle, trying to work out how to get function.
frying the noggin or the computer.
So that's my recommendation, David Brynan, and they are Bryce tutorials. And he's one of these gentlemen that really got to grips with it and was quite happy to share his knowledge.
What a guy. Lovely stuff. Listeners, thank you for tuning in to Rack Addicts After Hours. And we hope to catch you in episode 81. See you later. Bye.